bbc.co.uk/rednoseday/standup, and the voting lines are open until 7 o'clock on the evening of this Wednesday, the 16th of March. Well, a very good afternoon to you from me, Ian Skelly. Next this afternoon, the scandalous life of an Italian trombonist, a certain Mr. Tromboncino, who murdered his adulterous wife and her lover in a way that echoed that of Gesualdo's carryings on a century later. Hear all about it in the Early Music Show in just a moment here on BBC Radio 3, but with the time at 1 o'clock, a lunchtime summary of the news from John Shea.
The Japanese government has ordered the evacuation of everyone within a 12-mile radius of a nuclear power station where there's been an explosion. Pictures showed a powerful blast blowing out the walls and roof of a building at the Fukushima nuclear plant, which was damaged in yesterday's massive earthquake. Japan's nuclear safety agency says it's unlikely to have caused any serious damage to the reactor itself. Japan's Prime Minister Naoto Kan has described the earthquake and tsunami as an unprecedented national disaster. At least 1,300 people are thought to have died and many more are missing. The majority of victims were hit by the huge waves that swept inland. Rescue teams from the UK are preparing to fly to Japan to help. Around 60 volunteers will leave from Manchester later today after the Japanese government formally asked for help. In other news, foreign ministers of the 22-member Arab League are holding an emergency meeting in Cairo. Libya's rebel National Council has urged them to back a no-fly zone. Seven Iraqi soldiers have been ambushed and shot dead in the northern city of Mosul. The soldiers had just finished their shift and were travelling together in a vehicle when it was attacked. Liberal Democrats at the party's spring conference have expressed their opposition to the coalition's plans to modernise the health service. Delegates voted overwhelmingly in support of a motion condemning proposals to give GPs more control over local health budgets. The Scottish National Party is promising to maintain free university education for Scottish students if it wins power again at the Holyrood elections in 8 weeks' time. The party leader, Scotland's First Minister Alex Salmond, will make the pledge when he addresses the SNP's spring conference in Glasgow later today. And the weather. There'll be heavy snow in central and northern Scotland this afternoon and in Northern Ireland. Further south, it'll be dry and sunny in the southeast. The news and weather on BBC Radio 3 at 1:02.
And that was John Shea. Schoenberg and Beethoven are on the bill in an hour's time. The pianist Martin Helmchen gave his performance of those two composers at the Wigmore Hall on Monday, live here on Radio 3, and you can hear that performance again at 2 o'clock. But now it's time to delve into a colourful musical story from the past with today's Early Music Show. Here's Catherine Bott.
Hello. Are you up for a bit of early music scandal? Thought so. It is from half a century ago, but it is a good story too. So, are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin. Once upon a time in Italy. Now, you may think I'm about to rehash the story of usual suspect Gesualdo, writer of those tortured mannerist madrigals, the man who slew his wife and her lover when he caught them in the act. Same country? Same crime of passion, but 100 years earlier, the homicidal subject of today's early music show is Bartolomeo Tromboncino, a man whose professional name was that of his instrument, the trombone. His dad was called Bernardino Pifero, Bernie Shawm. Bart Trombone was a master of a peculiarly Italian type of song, a forerunner of the madrigal called the frottola. Let's hear an example straight away. In Che Debo Far, a sorrowing lover asks love himself for advice.
Interromper convien questi anni re,
Claire Wilkinson with lutenist Robert Meunier in a frottola by Bartolomeo Tromboncino. The Sorrowing Lover, by the way, is debating whether to end it all in beautifully constructed poetry by Petrarch. The word frottola comes from the Latin frocta, an assembly of random thoughts, which makes me smile. These songs are essentially graceful generic love stories, but 500 years on, the discussions in rehearsal are usually about the seemingly haphazard structure of these songs, with so many possible permutations of lines A, B, or C. If you want to know more, there's a lengthy article about the frottola in Grove's Dictionary, which elaborates quite mind-bogglingly on what the author describes as variant structures. And there's a telling phrase in the middle of the article. Generally, little attempt was made by frottola composers to express the content of the text. But as you've already heard, the music is ingratiating, and some of the lyrics in today's programme will provide a tart contrast to the events of Bart Trombone's life. He was born in about 1470 in or near Verona, where his father, Bernie Shorm in translation, was a member of the municipal wind band. Like father, like son, young Bartolomeo was a gifted trombonist, so he took a professional surname to match. By the age of 19, he was working at the court of Francesco Gonzaga, Marquis of Mantua. Here are a couple of pieces from the Mantuan court, the first by Johannes Martini, the second by Tromboncino himself.
Thank you.
The ensemble Circa 1500, directed by Nancy Haddon, playing Martini's Fuggi la Morte, and ensemble Les Nations, directed by Maria Luisa Baldassari, with an Ave Maria by Tromboncino, which specifically asks the Virgin to protect the Marquisate of Mantua. The d'Este siblings were early encouragers of Tromboncino's talents. Alfonso d'Este of Ferrara commissioned four books of Frottole, Cardinal Ippolito d'Este asked for a set of songs, and Isabella d'Este, Francesco Gonzaga's wife, gave him money. He'd travelled widely in northern Italy with the Mantuan court, but his trombone-playing days ended in the early 1490s, when he joined Isabella d'Este's court as a composer and lutenist. It seems that he served as her personal accompanist and tutor as well. On the 8th of May 1499, she thanked her half-brother Giulio for a group of songs, saying that if Tromboncino had not gone to Casale, we would have begun to sing them immediately. But as soon as he returns, we shall lose no time. Since my fortunes turned, I have lost my heart and my freedom to a beautiful little mountain girl. Where is my little darling love? What is she doing that she does not come? Carolyn Sampson and Robert Meunier with another song by Tromboncino, the lyrics of which remind me that by 1499 he was married, although there are only two things known about his wife, one of which is that her name was Antonia. We'll come to the question of the other thing and what his little darling love was doing later on. Between them, Tromboncino and his colleague Marchetto Cara had the Frottole scene at the court of Mantua sewn up, Bart working for Isabella and Marchetto for her husband Francesco. But Tromboncino's career in Mantua had its ups and downs. He fled to Venice in June 1495 for reasons unknown 500 odd years later, and only returned when his father begged him to. Perhaps now's the moment to mention that although he's best remembered for writing 170 frottole, he did also compose sacred music. We'll hear his setting of part of the Lamentations of Jeremiah, and first, fittingly, Stefano Albarello of Ensemble Les Nations singing a heartfelt prayer to the Father, Eterno mio Signor.
Eterno mio Signor. Thank you.
Ensemble Les Nations singing some of the Lamentations of Jeremiah by Bartolomeo Tromboncino. Back in Mantua, he seems to have stayed out of trouble for 4 years, keeping his head down and writing more frottole. Here's another of them, sung by Marie-Claude Valin, with the sonorous viols of the ensemble Douce Mémoire, directed by Denis Razin-Dadre. You have been given all the grace and beauty in the world, my lady, but all the cruelty too. May your coldness to me be quelled by long oblivion. Now that's a lyric with an edge to it. Tromboncino's Quanta Mai Leggiadria, performed by Douce Mémoire. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, and yes, we've reached the pivotal point of the story of Bartolomeo Tromboncino, composer of delicate love songs in Renaissance Italy, who murdered his wife. Here's how it happened, in July 1499, described in a breathless letter written by Tromboncino's noble employer, Isabella d'Este, to her husband. Today, around 5 o'clock in the afternoon, Alfonso Spagnolo came to notify me that Tromboncino had killed his wife with great cruelty for having found her at home alone in a room with Juan Maria de Triunfo, who was seen by Alfonso at the window asking him, Alfonso, to find a ladder. But hearing noise in the house, Alfonso did not wait and went inside. He found Tromboncino, who had attacked his wife with weapons, climbing the stairs accompanied by his father and a boy. Although Alfonso reprimanded him, Tromboncino replied that he had the right to punish his wife if he found her in error, and not having arms, Alfonso was unable to stop him, so that when he returned home for arms, she was already dead. Juan Maria, in the middle of this, jumped from the window. Tromboncino then retreated to the church of St. Barnabas with the father and the boy. For myself, I wanted to tell the story to your excellency and to beg you that, having had legitimate cause to kill his wife, and being of such good will and virtue as you are, to have mercy on them. Also on the father and the boy, who, as far as Alfonso could tell, did not help Tromboncino in any way except to escape. Isabella d'Este, interceding with her husband for the life of a murderer, and his father, who had acted as an accessory. Time for more music from Douce Mémoire and another telling lyric. You sleep peacefully without a care. My eyes will never close. A song by Bartolomeo Tromboncino, performed by Douce Mémoire. It seems that killing your adulterous wife was a grey area in Renaissance Italian law. Isabella d'Este was able to convince everyone that her personal in-house frottola man had been provoked beyond endurance, and Tromboncino was pardoned. A couple of years later, though, he was off again. Francesco Gonzaga wrote of this departure that Tromboncino has left our service in a deplorable manner and without permission, even though he was the best paid and had more favours and kindnesses and liberty than any of the courtiers in our house. Amazingly, Isabella still wanted him back, whatever he'd done this time. No one knows. So back he came. In February 1502, he sang in the Intermedi at the wedding of Lucrezia Borgia to Alfonso d'Este at Ferrara, and Isabella commented that his performance brought honour to Mantua. And in 1504, he set words by Petrarch, apparently at Isabella's request. Si è debile il filo appears in the seventh book of Frottole, published by Petrucci in Venice in 1507.
Mancando il troppo in lei, ma
Emma Kirkby with lutenist Anthony Rulli in Tromboncino's setting of words by Petrarch. Rather sad words, too. The thread on which my heavy life hangs is worn so thin that if no one supports it, it will soon have reached its end. Isabella d'Este's unwavering support for Tromboncino had also reached its end. By June 1505, he'd left Mantua to enter the service of Lucrezia Borgia in Ferrara. His name appears in her employment records for several years, and he was probably still working for her in 1510, when her court was forced to dispense with the services of many musicians because of the costs of a war against Venice. Tromboncino stayed in Ferrara, though, entering the service of Lucrezia's brother-in-law, Cardinal Ippolito d'Este, in 1511. Let's pause a moment to contemplate the huge significance of the d'Este family. Ippolito the Cardinal, Isabella, who married into the Gonzagas, and Alfonso, who married Lucrezia Borgia, were three of the six children of Ercole d'Este, Duke of Ferrara, who employed, among others, Josquin, Obrecht and Brumel. So the name of d'Este is important to the world of early music, not just to the career of bard trombone. In 1513, it's possible that Cardinal Ippolito took Tromboncino to Rome, which is where Michelangelo Buonarroti lived, poet as well as artist. The words to this next song are his. How shall I find the strength to part from you if you don't help me? Emily van Ivera and circa 1500 in Tromboncino's setting of words by Michelangelo, Come aro dunque ardire. After a few more years, when he may have been working for Lucrezia Borgia, Tromboncino finally left Ferrara and rented a house in Venice, where he established a school of music for young ladies. By now, it seems he had a second wife and some children. His reputation began to rest mainly on his students, who were regarded as the best lutenists and singers in the Veneto region. Here's a little trifle he wrote for a Venetian carnival in the early 1530s. Meyer directed the Josquin Ensemble of Vienna in Tromboncino's song Ai Maroni o Donne Care, probably performed at the Venice Carnival of 1535, by which time Tromboncino was possibly no more. Sorry to qualify things with that probably and possibly, but you know how it is with Renaissance composers. I call it little is known syndrome. Tromboncino is notorious for killing his wife. But for several years either side of that terrible July day, he was famous and admired for his music. His talent got him off the hook several times, despite deplorable behaviour. But fame doesn't last forever, and when he was about 50, and obviously in need of funds, he made a big commercial mistake. Applying for a composer's patent in 1521, he stated that he had composed in the past many settings of canzoni, madrigals, sonnets, capitoli and strambotti, Latin verses and Latin ode, vulgar barzelletti, frottolas and dialogues. He asked the Doge of Venice to allow no one to print or have printed in this land any of the above-mentioned songs or any of the others that the said supplicant should compose and has composed in the past for 15 years under the penalty of 10 ducats for each work printed. Whether or not the Doge granted this patent is not known, but if he did, it wrecked Tromboncino's career. Publication of his music stopped at once. Much of it had been pirated anyway, and this attractive repertoire dropped out of sight in Italy long before he died. Let's remember Tromboncino as a composer of integrity rather than as a murderer. More of his frottole are settings of named, often great poets, than those of any of his contemporaries. Among those poets, Ovid, Ariosto, Michelangelo, and above all, 12 poems by Petrarch. So we'll end with Julian Podger and Robert Meunier performing Bartolomeo Tromboncino's refined setting of Petrarch's supplication to the Queen of Heaven, Vergine Bella.
Vergine bella che di sol vestita coronata di stelle al sono sole piacesti sì che Gesù a luce ascose amor mi spinge a dir di tua ida e di colui che amando in te si pose invoco lei che ben se prese
false, al mio prego vi inchina. Soccorri alla mia guerra, ben chi sia terra e tu.
Vergine Bella by Bartolomeo Tromboncino, the subject of today's early music show. The performers there were Julian Podger and Robert Mornier. Well, today's programme was presented by Catherine Bott and it was produced by Sam Phillips. And Catherine is back tomorrow lunchtime to explore that enigmatic masterpiece of the Baroque, Johann Sebastian Bach's Mass in B minor. That's at the same time, just after the 1 o'clock news. And later tomorrow, Discovering Music sets out to explore the architecture of Stravinsky's music, one of his sacred pieces, his Symphony of Psalms, composed in between the two world wars and the first musical expression of his rediscovered Christian faith. Tom Service presents the programme. He'll be joined by the composer Julian Anderson and Stravinsky's biographer Stephen Walsh. The BBC Symphony Orchestra and singers provide the musical examples, and then they give a full performance of the piece, all in Discovering Music, tomorrow afternoon here on Radio 3 from 5. And at 5 o'clock this afternoon, by the way, there's a change to the usual way we do things. Our live visit to New York this week in Opera on 3 begins an hour earlier than usual because of the length of the opera. So that means a slight rearrangement to the way that we do the jazz on Saturday afternoon. Our live relay of Mussorgsky's Boris Godunov with René Papa in the title role begins at 5, and Jazz Record Requests follows Opera on 3 rather than precedes it. You can hear Geoffrey Smith and this week's selection at 9:30. Well, in a moment, we're off to Wigmore Hall in London for music by for piano by Beethoven and Schoenberg after a very serious announcement.
On Monday night...
Myself, Mitch Benn, Marcus Briggsdock, Sue Perkins, Emma Kennedy, Tim Vine and 140 other luminaries will attempt to form... the world's largest kazoo ensemble for comic relief.
BBC Radio 3's Concert for Comic Relief at the Royal Albert Hall.
Do join us. We wouldn't want to have to come and find you.
Go to bbc.co.uk/rednoseday/radio3 for more details and to book tickets.
Now there's a threat. This is BBC Radio 3. It's now 2 o'clock. And in an hour from now, live music making in the studio. Aurelio Martinez joins Lucy Duran to play music of the Central American Garifuna people, an interesting blend of African, Caribbean, Indian and Latin music, as you'll hear in World Roots at 3. But now it's time for another chance to hear last Monday's live lunchtime concert, which was recorded at Wigmore Hall in London. And it was presented by Louise Fryer.
Former Radio 3 New Generation artist, the pianist Martin Helmschen, gives our recital today, a programme of works by two Viennese composers, Schoenberg and Beethoven, which seems appropriate given that winning the Credit Suisse Young Artist Award a couple of years ago culminated in Martin making his debut with the Vienna Philharmonic. Since then, he's worked with orchestras all over the world, as well as giving solo recitals across Europe, including performing Beethoven duos with Heinrich Schiff at Vienna's Konzerthaus. His concert today is largely devoted to Beethoven's mighty Sonata No. 29 in B-flat major, the Hammer Clavier. And as an appetizer to that epic work, which lasts around 3/4 of an hour, Martin Helmschen has chosen quite a contrast, 6 little pieces for piano by Arnold Schoenberg. They were written in 1911 in the run-up to the First World War and convey not only the intensity of the time, but also its creativity and its anarchic reaction to the romanticism of the late 19th century. None of the pieces last much more than a minute, each offering just a few fragments of sound, sudden flurries that end as abruptly as they begin. They convey a sense of curiosity that's somehow beguiling, even as they conjure a feeling of despair. The first 5 were written in a single day, the last a few months later after the death of Mahler. Schoenberg had been part of Mahler's funeral cortege, but one musicologist suggests this short musical homage is the antithesis of a funeral march. And here comes German pianist Martin Helmschen to begin this recital live from Wigmore Hall with 6 little pieces by Schoenberg, Opus 19.
Thank you.
6 little pieces for piano written by Arnold Schoenberg, his Opus 19, first performed in Berlin in 1912, played here almost a century later by Berlin-born pianist Martin Helmchen. Schoenberg wrote to Busoni a couple of years before writing those pieces, announcing his intention to turn his back on Romanticism. Away with weighty, protracted scores, my music must be short, lean, in two notes, not built, but expressed. So I wonder what he'd make of Martin Helmchen placing those 6 short pieces at the start of a concert mostly given over to one of the most expansive solo piano works of the early 19th century, Beethoven's Hammerklavier Sonata, Opus 106. Beethoven devoted months to its composition, starting in 1817, the first of a number of monumental pieces he went on to write, including his 9th Symphony and the Missa Solemnis. But in the Hammerklavier, Beethoven doesn't indulge in any kind of lyrical romanticism. It's